Time now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
And welcome on into our streaming show today. We appreciate you being here. Thanks for finding us wherever you're watching right now and wherever you're streaming our IUP TV episode. Share with your friends, will you? Tell them how to download this app that you're watching on, the News for Utah Plus app, and then tell them that this is the best political show in the state.
The best.
I might be biased, though. Let's be honest. All right. Rusty Cannon and Sarah Real are with us today. Guys, introduce yourselves.
Rusty Cannon with the Utah Credit Union Association. Today's views are mine and mine only.
Mm-hmm. My views are mine and mine only as well. And I am Sarah Real. I'm on the state school board. I represent District 5, and I teach political science at Salley Community College.
It's going to be a lovely conversation today. We are going to hit things like Governor Cox making some comments today on how the state may make up some of the people who fall off Medicaid with the Big Beautiful Bill passing and other programs like SNAP and some education funding that may go away, how the state may step in there. Also going to talk about Utah County, the latest county in Utah to sign an agreement with ICE, and there was a very contentious hearing about that the other day. Can Utah pursue its case on public lands? Right now, an environmentalist group is suing to say Utah gave up that right at statehood, but state leaders disagree, so we'll get your thoughts on that. And then if we have time, some charges dropped against a Utah doctor accused of defrauding the federal government with COVID vaccines. So
I thought we were talking about the WNBA All-Star Weekend.
We were going to talk about that, but I'm not up to date on my WNBA stats like
next
you,
time,
Sarah.
Next time.
We should be. And your gold vest is popping today.
Thank you.
We have to comment on everyone's outfit because Rusty got dressed up for us over here.
Hey. At least I wore a hat.
You know. You're golfing today, I presume?
I'm not going to confront. I'm going to take the fifth.
Who are you golfing with?
I take the fifth.
Come on now.
Yeah. It might be by myself. I don't know.
This is how men in politics like make deals, right? Yeah. You golf with people?
Hey, everyone golfs. I'm going to take the fifth.
Okay, yeah. All right. Producer Peter's here too. Hi, Peter.
Hi, folks.
Are you golfing today?
No. I'm here.
We're all working today.
Very sad. This is my summer podcasting outfit.
It's late in the day. There's been stuff done.
Someone gets to just golf on a Thursday.
Don't blame Rusty for being very efficient in his work.
That's right.
Let's be honest.
By 10 a.m. than most people do all day.
I'm just jealous. Let's be honest. Okay, let's dive right in, shall we? Governor Cox today kind of signaling that the state may take a look at helping out where the Big Beautiful Bill has made it so some people may not receive, whether it's Medicaid or SNAP. We know that the Big Beautiful Bill has kind of curbed, added some work requirements, curbed who might get eligibility. And so there are fears and concerns that some vulnerable people might fall off just a function of the work requirements, the bureaucracy, the red tape that it might take to complete these work requirements. Let's take a listen to what Governor Cox said about the state stepping in here.
We've done some interesting things in the past to help people who are struggling with their health care, and we'll look back at those programs to see if there's a way to implement more in the future.
What about SNAP as well?
Yeah, SNAP again, another one that we'll be looking very closely at and what those impacts will be. It may mean we end up funding more from the state level.
So let's just start with Medicaid and then maybe we'll get to SNAP. But what should Utah do to help with these programs? Rusty, I'll let you go first.
Well, again, we discussed this a little bit last week where most of it, in my opinion, and I think if you accurately read the bill, are implementing work requirements for some that haven't had work requirements before. Mm-hmm. Able-bodied adults within a specific age range. And then some are accepted out of that if they have children or disabilities, those kinds of things. So I'm not really sure where the state would need to pick things up. There is some slowing of growth of spending that's phased in over the next 5-6 years that maybe the state could add some there, but I don't think it would be that expensive for the state to fill any gaps.
But the state could do things like help educate people on to apply, how to create the paperwork that it's going to take to do work requirements, additional
ones. Yeah, but there's already work requirements, for instance, with SNAP. It already goes to age 49. They added 5 more years with that work requirement. The paperwork exists, and more people have to fill it out.
Do they have to renew every year? I mean,
a lot of that will be sorted out. A lot of these changes are implemented slowly, so there will be time to adjust, and I think most people will be able to adjust. However, like the governor said, I think if there are instances where somebody has their benefits that are justified, threatened, obviously the state would want to step in and help. But there should be room in the budget for that.
Yeah. Sarah?
Yeah, I really hope that all of this talk that I hear from our state government and all of the leaders about how we don't need the federal government, we don't need federal spending, we don't need the money, we can take care of it here in Utah, I hope that they show me that they really mean that and they make up for any shortfalls that might exist. And on the healthcare piece, to me, I think it's more complex. Like, for example, my mom texted me yesterday a reply to an email. And I said, "Mom, you're texting me." And she thought she was emailing someone else, but she actually texted me. And so,
bless your mother.
It is hard for some vulnerable populations that don't fit into some of the exemptions, folks with mental health, you know, folks that really need healthcare in order to be able to be capable of doing things, and just the process of getting that uploaded. I don't think my mom could upload a pay stub online if she tried. Mm-hmm. It's also can be complicated for folks like a farmer. Like, how is a farmer supposed to prove that they're working so many hours a month, right? What do they say? Like, can I have my neighbor write in and say that I was on the tractor 4 days last week? Like, I'm not sure how a lot of those things are going to work. And those are kind of the in-between that I maybe think we haven't thought through thoroughly yet. Mm. But regardless, I just hope that the state shows up and fills in the gaps for some of these folks that might be losing funding, losing SNAP, losing money that we have in education that we really need.
Yeah, let's talk about that education piece, because we know that some federal grants, education grants, have been paused to the tune of about $30 to $40 million here in Utah. Sarah, you're on the State Board of Education. Where does that money go, and what are districts and schools doing right now that thought they might be getting this money July 1st?
Yeah, a lot is still uncertain. I know you had Superintendent Molly Hart on the show, and she said that over and over again because it is so true. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, we don't know what's going to happen here. And I hate that uncertainty. It's bad for planning. It's bad for students. So I don't like that. But I do know that the areas that we're seeing where we could be losing are some of our most vulnerable populations. Title I schools, Title II schools, English language learners, adult learning. And so to me, that's really concerning. And it's hard for me to not believe it's targeted. And that's what really makes me grumpy, because education is for everyone. We need to close the gaps in equity in education so that every Utah student deserves the right to a great education. And when we're cutting funding in the most vulnerable populations, we just can't do that. So I really hope, again, just like the governor said when the President Trump talked about closing the Department of Education, that he does show up and him and the legislature find ways to fund those areas that we need the money.
Rusty, are we doing that? Are we targeting people? And to your point, you say there's room in the budget. Yeah. I've heard for years it's a socks and underwear budget year at the state capitol, right? They always tell us that. So where does this money come from? Yeah. What are your thoughts?
I don't think it's targeted at all. However, I think this is a chance for the Republican leaders in the state Senate, state House to prove it, to say, okay, and come up with innovative solutions to make sure nobody is literally targeted or even a perception of targeting. This is a chance for them to prove it. They can go and do that type of thing. There are hundreds and hundreds of people that show up to the Capitol every year. Sarah knows this with her experience in education, saying, I have a great idea and it's going to cost this much money and you should fund it. And, and so you hear legislative leaders often saying the whole socks and underwear thing. It is legitimate. However, it is also a solid strategy to just get people to chill and reduce that incoming fire of, hey, I heard you have extra money, spend it on my favorite project.
Yeah.
Those types of things.
The bank is closed.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. They just kind of push back. However, Utah has always shown to be very innovative when it comes to funding. Sometimes they're forced to do that. And this is a case where they'll have to prove it and show, yes, we're not going to let vulnerable populations suffer. Here's where we're going to redirect funds. This is a chance for, in my case, as a Republican, to show, hey, we care and we can do this right. And we get a chance to prove it.
We'll have to see what
happens. And if they do, I will buy you a large swig soda.
Okay.
Also, please sponsor our show.
Yes, Nicole Tanner, where are you? Swig is wonderful.
And I'll be happy if they do. And then, I'll say, great, thank you. You know, that I will definitely hold my tongue.
I'm coming on your swig date for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
You guys have to just buy me one because I'm me. Okay, let's move to another topic that is come to a head in Utah County. That is, they assigned an agreement with ICE. It's called a 287G agreement. It's basically an agreement that says that some of our local law enforcement can basically be deputized, if you will, and gain some of the powers that ICE has. Now, Utah County says they're going to do this at a very high level with their Violent Crimes Task Force officers, those folks who are investigating the cartels and the drug rings here in Utah to try to curb some of the most violent crimes. But as evidenced by who showed up at a public hearing just this week, residents have a lot of concerns that this could span out into ICE raids on farms or at people's workplaces, things like that. Let's take a listen to what Sheriff Mike Smith said in Utah County and some of the reaction.
If things are happening in this community that I'm not okay with, like ICE raids, then we're going to address those with ICE. This brings us to the table, and I'm asking for the community's trust. I'm your elected sheriff. I love this community.
Can you tell us your plan to prevent us from following Germany's game plan to the Holocaust?
Embarrassing.
I'm just here to help people.
You're about to close public hearing. We didn't have to listen to anybody today, Joseph, and you're about to ruin it for everybody else.
Yeah, so a really tense hearing at times yesterday. I've been in a few public meetings that get pretty tense. Doesn't usually happen on the county level. Usually it's at the state level, but definitely passion on both sides. Rusty, let me start with you. Just how does signing this agreement with ICE change things for Utah County? Because to be fair, they're not the first state to do this in Utah. They're just the latest, and the meeting kind of blew up.
Yeah, my understanding. So first of all, this is a controversial topic, as we know, and you bring this up. It's one of those issues now where everybody's, you know, hairs raise and tensions get very high. So I'm not surprised. I get PTSD from attending so many of those meetings in my previous work about taxes. And people get so fired up, and you just can't wait for the meeting to end.
Rusty was the president of the Tax Association, so he heard it a lot.
Yeah, people get so angry sometimes, and you just hope they'd calm down a bit. But justifiably, this is a big issue. You saw the sheriff there saying he's asking for this authority to, if I understand correctly, work a little bit better with ICE and maybe give some of the ICE powers to his force and implement things in a way that they think is reasonable. You don't want it going too far, but as he said right there, I'm asking you to trust me. Mm-hmm. And I think most people would trust him and his group to do it correctly, to not have, you know, inappropriate ICE raids going on and those kinds of things, I think. But they'll need to prove it.
He's asking for the people to trust him, but people are commenting there saying, we don't trust ICE. And so to Smith's point, they don't have any control over what ICE does. Yeah. That's why they're signing this agreement. They don't have any jurisdiction. They can't tell ICE what to do. They can't tell them to wear masks or not wear masks. Like, they can't tell them anything, right? So, I mean, I guess, Sarah, just weigh in here. What do you think this changes, or does it just stoke fear unnecessarily?
I will say, when I first saw this headline, I immediately thought, oh, great. Like, this is another targeting type scenario. This is Utah government, you know, participating in this extreme way of extreme deportation. And I've been sick about it. Mm-hmm. I have, because we've really veered away from, we're looking for criminals. We're looking for, you know, people that are threatening our communities, and turn to what we're seeing is instances of targeting and instances of folks that shouldn't be put into deportation, alligator Alcatraz or whatever, right? We're seeing that happen over and over again. So I read that and I was like, oh gosh, what is this? Another one, right? And I was very, very impressed and very surprised to be completely wrong. I thought that the sheriff did an outstanding job in his statement about why he's doing this, how he cared so deeply about his community, how he is going to focus back on what the intent was, which is dangerous criminals, and how this gives them a seat at the table, regardless of how much power they have. And I haven't read through the entire agreement, mm-hmm. but not doing job raids, that's huge. Mm-hmm. And actually having a say in a partnership with ICE while they're in their communities, I think that's a benefit. Will it work out? I'm not sure. I think we're in a weird zone right now where we're like, I don't know how all of these partnerships are going to work. I know the city of Mill Creek, city of South Salt Lake have talked similarly about these type of instances. But regardless, I think coming out as a county and saying, we care deeply about our citizens, we understand that you are being targeted and you are scared, we understand that the rhetoric nationwide is extreme and quite frightening, but we're going to try to have a seat at the table so we make sure we really are only getting the dangerous criminals and that we are not seeing job raids. That's huge to me.
I mean, Sarah makes a great point. She took the information and took time to learn it before, you know, reaction, informed opinion.
And
you see with this issue,
with
this issue, there is a high level of misinformation and quick to judge type of stuff. And if people take the time often, like in this case, to learn the details, you think, oh, okay, that sounds reasonable versus the hyperbole.
Right. But some of that messaging, Rusty, is coming from Republicans, and it is coming from the top down in terms of this whole agreement is allowed because of an executive order by President Trump that says you guys can do this. Are Republicans getting the messaging right on immigration here? There's a reason so many people showed up to that Utah County meeting on a Tuesday at 2:00. It was a Thursday, excuse me.
Yeah, I honestly think the messaging is generally spot on. If you look at polling on this issue, it's fairly popular. if you're dealing with the criminal element. I think once you get past that, it gets deeply unpopular. But I think especially with the criminal element, it is a very popular issue. It's one of the highest, if you take polling on issues with this current president, that is where he is the highest in polling. However, if it bleeds into targeting and nonviolent criminals, that popularity just drops off a cliff. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to Sarah's point, we have seen some of that across the nation. So folks at that meeting are saying, we may trust you, Sheriff Smith and Commissioner Gardner Powers, but we don't necessarily trust ICE.
Yeah, I mean, we used to not allow ICE into courthouses, into schools, and into churches. And that felt like a very reasonable boundary, right? And we've seen all of those be completely overstepped. And so that's why people are scared. Mm-hmm. And so I think anything we can do to find these dangerous criminals, yes, that's fine, but we need to stop with this like massive deportation rhetoric and the targeting of people that are not worthy of the target.
The county leaders say it may take even a year to implement, so we'll have some time to see and kind of like...
That's good.
Yeah, and kind of see how things roll out. Peter, did you have thoughts here?
Yeah, the one thing I just wanted to interject, first of all, I did have a fact check, Lindsay. It was a Wednesday afternoon.
Oh, it was a Wednesday.
Neither a Tuesday nor
not
a Thursday.
Not a Tuesday or a Thursday.
Which is
not
unfortunate.
Even 2 o'clock on Thursday. I don't know what day of the week it is. I took my dog to the groomer on the wrong day. I'm all over the place, guys.
But I think both here in the state and nationally, even you've seen kind of the course of the conversation on immigration enforcement change. You know, you're seeing discussion in Washington about like where will we make exceptions to the current regime of immigration enforcement. The governor was asked about that at his monthly press conference today, where he said, you know, I do trust President Trump to kind of ferry us through this issue and find a path where everyone is going to be on board with this issue, because like Rusty said, it is very popular for the president. So if we find those carve outs that do protect, I mean, people who've been here long running, people who work these really essential jobs where, you know, you're not going to replace that labor force in hospitality or farming, I think you could find a path where everyone gets on board here. It's just this week, I really feel like we've seen people talk more about that where in the fallout from California protests and so on, I think there was a lot of fear. And the alligator Alcatraz moment didn't really help either.
Yeah.
But then the governor today also denied that Utah would be looking into building an immigration detention facility here, right? Which seemed on the table even just a few months ago. So I think the tide is subtly changing here, even if the policy has not yet.
And we still haven't seen Congress do anything, right?
Exactly.
So we can talk we can talk all day about what I should and shouldn't do, but to fix immigration, Congress has to do something, and that isn't even on the table yet.
Nope.
So we shall see. All right, let's move to another topic that kind of has national implications too, and that is a lawsuit that is kind of working its way through the courts over public lands. Now, let me set the stage really quick. The state of Utah tried to go to the Supreme Court back in January and say, hey, federal government, you cannot hold on to public lands indefinitely. The Constitution does not allow that. The Supreme Court says, hi, Utah, we don't care. We're not going to hear your argument. I'm summarizing, obviously, and making light of it. So recently, environmental group, the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, sued the state of Utah to say, hey, Utah, you can't even pursue a case like this because at statehood, we said Utah forever gives up their rights to this unappropriated land because we want to become a state, and that's the deal we made with the federal government. So that's the question before a lower court right now, a third district court here in Salt Lake, is can the district court say, yeah, Utah, you agreed to this, and obviously the state's saying, no, you can't prevent us from filing a federal lawsuit, and we may not even file that federal lawsuit. Who knows yet? So what say ye? Where do you think this goes?
You know, I was going to make the point. I think this is preemptive. I don't think the state has even done anything yet. And that's what a little bit of the confusion on this. But
yeah.
I always smile. I get excited when those that I get frustrated with for sometimes contextualizing words of Constitution and saying things should change and be alive, to take it literally. I'm all for it.
So you're saying the plain language of the text is not something SUA usually interprets?
No.
Right.
I mean, not SUA specifically, but I'm just saying, I'm being totally partisan here, but I'm just saying, let's pay attention to what the Constitution, whether it's the Utah one or the U.S., what it actually says.
Mm.
Amen.
Okay, but that would mean Utah can't go after these public lands because it says we forever gave up these rights.
You can argue
statehood.
You can argue about the words and those types of things, but I think if you always go back to trying to take it as literal as possible, that's good, in my personal opinion.
Okay.
Yeah, so
Sarah, what say ye?
Well, I think the likelihood of them winning this case is very low.
Sue, what are you saying?
No, the state.
Oh, the state.
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah.
But I also, I think this entire argument, a lot of folks, you know, on both sides say, one side is like, we want our states to be able to manage it. So much of our land is taken up by federally designated lands. And the other part is like, well, we want to keep the lands public. Public lands are good, right? There is one piece in there that I think scares a lot of people. It scares me, is that the state is like, we want our land back. And I'm like, show me a plan to manage that land. Mm. Because I do not think the state can manage that land and has the money and resources to manage that land. So what then my mind turns to is, if our state doesn't have the resources or a plan to manage this land, then they're more likely to try and make money off this land, which means more oil, more gas, right? And more drilling, and I hate that.
Yes, things like that.
And less regulation. So, in fact, like Mike Lee's proposal, Senator Lee's proposal, to have requirements in place for what happens with that land, using it for housing, and there was like some stipulations, is actually better than just handing this route to the state of Utah.
Wait, did you just say a Mike Lee idea was a good idea?
Better than
okay.
this. I actually think both ideas are terrible, but the Mike Lee one at least had some
good,
okay.
better, best, yeah,
okay.
Rusty, is yes, what we're
yes.
talking yeah. about here.
Better but still crummy idea was it had at least stipulations, right? Yeah. This would not have stipulations on how Utah manages the land. And to me, if they don't have the money, they're going to be looking to make money on this land, which means, you know, housing, drilling, whatever it is. And that scares me. And so I think that is part of the reason why Sue and other folks are nervous, because they don't see a plan. They don't see any agreements to how they will use the land. And they know that they're going to need money to manage them, which means they're going to have to sell the land off and make that money somehow. And the way that they want to do that is pretty icky.
Mm.
I think a lot of the conversations, at least that I've been part of on this subject, which have been from the periphery, but is, for example, Salt Lake County. There are tons of parcels of land, little bits and pieces that fall into this category. And you think, well, wait a minute. I mean, you pick an example somewhere where it's just, you know, a barren piece of land or something that could fit some housing and help with the affordable housing problem. I think that's a legitimate idea in carving those off. I don't think, and this is where I think Senator Lee and others lost the conversations, when it's perceived of, wait, you want to sell arches?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, no, that's not what we're talking about. It's not, you know, your beautiful, where you ride your bikes and those kinds of things. We're talking about areas that could be reasonably developed that is close to population for housing. That would be the reasonable use for this, not to take a massive swath of beautiful forests and let's go make a few million bucks. That's not a good idea.
You know, I know a lot of golf courses that could make really good housing.
Don't mess with golf.
Yes, I know. Right. My dad will kill me for saying that. Right. And I'm a golfer too, but
hilarious.
I think there is, I think one piece that the state of Utah needs to look at strategically and politically is, it was a bad message to want to sell off the land. So, I mean, I'm not going to tell them what to do, but if I were looking politically and strategically, I'd lay off the buying of public lands for right now.
Well, I think he torched that idea for the next 10 years.
But it does sound like there's a happy medium in here where people could get on board with just these.
If you explain it properly.
Right.
Yeah.
So Mike Lee may have lost the messaging, right, on that. And just there has yet to be a plan that satisfies, we have some of this land that isn't being used for anything, but we can't figure out how to get it in the right place or target it.
Yeah.
That hasn't happened.
Because that issue got horseshoed, as that term a lot of people are using, is you had the far left and then horseshoes all the way around to the far right were both opposing it. It was dead on arrival.
Yeah. It got a little messy.
Yeah.
All right, Rusty Cannon, Sarah Real, thank you for your opinions today.
Thank you for
all your thoughts. I love the conversation as always. And I'll invite you to watch our show that airs on TV, Channel 4, if you're here locally, or abc4.com. Inside Utah Politics airs Sundays at 8 and 4. And as always, we're online, so you can podcast us too. And wherever you podcast, just search for Inside Utah Politics.
Like, comment, and subscribe.
Follow me. thank you for joining us today. Producer Peter, appreciate you as always.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Okay, we will see you next week.
Bye, everybody.